Frank Stanford, former Ray Langdon, on the program once again this morning. Do thank you for joining us. Going to shift our attention away from politics for the moment into the office, into the workplace. A new report from the Human Resources Management Association of British Columbia, and I welcome to the show for this segment, Director of Research and Learning, and a certified human resources professional with the association, Ian Cook. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Frank.
Thank you for joining us.
Not at all.
You folks assert that absenteeism in the British Columbia workforce is at an all-time high.
That's correct, yeah.
How high is it, sir? And how do we know it's at an all-time high?
So I'll answer the all-time high piece first. We have a, when you say it's a survey, it's not a one-shot deal. We have a data service that samples on a quarterly basis. So we track a range of people-related measurements, business-related measurements on that basis. We have a wide sample of organizations. Again, the same organizations give us its information every quarter. So if I look back in the 2009 where we had Q1, we have the numbers there. We were looking at, I think we had the swine flu was going on at that point, so there was a lot of absence for sickness because people were advised to stay home if they felt ill. So we know the number for Q1 in 2009. We then had Q1 of 2010, which we had the Olympics and a lot of additional days off to go and enjoy that particular spectacle. 2010 was higher than 2009. We're now in Q1 of 2011, and we have reports for the Q2 of 2011, and we don't have any medical situations, we don't have any great sporting events, and yet the numbers are higher again. So what we're looking at is on a quarterly basis, we're looking at 2 days per person absent. And so you roll that up across a 500-person organization, that starts to be a lot of days and a lot of cost.
Yeah, a lot of lost productivity. Is that in fact the number? Two days per.
Yes. So our median number. So you know, it depends. Is what's the number? If we're looking at the median of the sample group. So sample groups are 80 odd organizations, 160,000 odd employees within it. And when we run the numbers, the median for that group is 1.9. So you're looking at every single one of your employees for Q1 having been away for 2 days. So 2 days of paid time that is not worked.
Yeah. Now, do you, if survey's the wrong word, I'm sorry, but do you stay in touch with all employers in all industries? And I'm thinking particularly, I'll tell you where my question is leading, companies of all sizes. It strikes me that the smaller the company, the smaller the operation, the greater the proportionate impact of somebody's being away.
Yeah, and it would, to be, you know, again, being precise in the numbers, we tend not to have organizations that are below 50 in terms of employee base. The information we feed back, they know it already. They can see it in their organization. The person isn't at their desk. Whoever is looking after that, be it the general manager, be it the HR professional, they know that sort of information. So we wouldn't represent the smaller organizations. However, our other, in terms of the makeup, it is very broad-based. We have public sector, both government and the broader public sector in terms of healthcare. We have private sector where we have businesses that are publicly owned and privately owned. We have cooperatives. We have institutions. So our numbers are kind of they paint a picture across the board, and they do come from across Canada as well. So fairly good representation in terms of, is this a factor that's affecting the workforce in general? And we would say our data is saying yes, and it's corroborated by a number of other inputs, such as information that comes from Stats Canada and other pieces of survey work that's being done. So we think it's a very clear, well-substantiated issue, something that organizations need to focus on, because there's a number of things that go into absenteeism.
Yes, and well, my next question is, have we determined, or I take it we're trying to determine why it's so high?
Yeah, and I think we probably know, I think we know why it's so high more than we know that it is high. And a lot of the commentary that's been in the press on some of the people issues facing business are about the aging workforce, are about the low the lesser commitment of the younger workforce. They are about the stress levels that come from working in tough economic times. And what's been less played in the press, but it's certainly something that we're seeing, is also the re-heating up and the re-dynamic nature of the labor market. Although unemployment itself is not shrinking, there is a significant increase in the amount of movement of people between employers. So not necessarily moving from unemployment into employment, but moving from employer to employer to employer. And all of those pieces build up into your absence number. You know, in general, people are absent because they're sick, they get a cold. That's common. You know, we don't expect absence to be zero. That's not a realistic position, but there is quite a wide range between the best and the worst within our database.
Yeah.
The other thing that happens is you've got a job interview. It's much easier to call in with a cold than to turn up in your suit and tie for some reason that's not, you know, your usual garb, so much easier for that to happen. So those kinds of behaviors then start to go out across the population, start to increase your average absence number. All of those things lead to additional costs. So, you know, the number of days where people have a cold is one thing, but the number of days where somebody's got a medical condition that's unfortunately getting worse and leading to increased doctor's appointments, increased absence, that then leads to, you know, short-term disability, long-term disability. The more you have of those, the more, you know, just on a percentage basis, the more are going to lead to something chronic. It's an unfortunate part of the work world, but it's a real part of the work world. Organizations need to be aware of it and on top of it. The same said, you know, the more somebody knows that so-and-so had a sick day because they were looking for going for a job interview, there is research that corroborates when the people around you start looking for work, it just causes you to ask that question. It's like, well, if they don't like it here, why do I like it here? Should I be doing something else? Is there something better? And so there's a thing called turnover contagion, where other people looking for work and that being known by their peers can actually lead to that happening in for more people. So more people take the casual sick day to go for the interview. That starts to show up in your absence numbers.
Yeah. Is fibbing to your employer about the reason for a sick day, calling in sick when you're not, is that cause for dismissal legally?
It would depend on how your set up, on how your agreement is set up. Most organizations would have what they would call an allocation of casual sick days. So, you know, you can be sick for 3 to 5 days in a year, and kind of no questions asked. It's to lead to the minimal level of administration. We don't want to feel like we're constantly on the backs of staff. It doesn't lead to a good work environment.
Yes.
However, technically, if you had called in sick and were found to have gone to a job interview, I don't think, well, some organizations might take this step to go with instant dismissal. You would certainly be in breach of contract to some extent. The majority of the practice would be to caution, warn, try and actually get somebody to say, look, just, you know, tell us what's happening on, and we'll deal with it in an adult fashion rather than dismiss. But yes, you're technically offside with your employer, and you should expect
some repercussions
from that. And yeah. The employer, you know, is going to choose how tightly to the law they get, and that's also going to depend on your sort of work circumstance, whether it's, you know, more unionized, less unionized, those kinds of pieces.
Yeah, yeah. If you are legitimately sick, if you do have the sniffles,
yeah.
I take it that the modern approach is that you should call in sick rather than saying tough it out. I, you know, the boss, the old-fashioned guy that says, I've never taken a sick day in my life, why do you? I think the impression or the general wisdom in the workplace now is you should take the day off rather than infecting everybody else.
Yeah, there's definitely more of an appreciation of that. I think I think it was the swine flu period, the H1N1 period we had a couple of years back, where, you know, there's the risk of an individual then spreading it to the broader work group, and that having significantly more negative impacts is definitely recognized. So there is more of recognition of, yeah, if you're not feeling great, don't come in, take the time, rest, get better, then come back to work. And that is why most employers would have a policy around, you know, the number of days sick that you're entitled to or kind of are expected without having to then be in some sort of formal sick day process. So again, most organizations, 3 to 5 days And they're not kind of no questions asked, but they're just on an honor system. When you start to get over that, then we start to get into the, well, you know, your absence is above the normal. You're not sharing exactly why it's for. I can't ask you what you've got, but I'm going to need some doctor's information to corroborate this absence.
Yeah. We're talking with Ian Cook of the Human Resources Management Association. I think we've got a good picture of what you people see happening in the workplace. I'd like to turn our attention to, is it a problem, and do we have to address these changing numbers, and if so, how, as we continue after this break. Ian Cook is our guest on this portion of the program. He is Director of Research and Learning at the Human Resources Management Association of BC, and we've got one or two folks want to have a word with you on the telephone, sir. Don and Sanich, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Frank, and to you, Ian. Great subject, too, Frank. This one has been stirring inside of me for years and years and years. I personally don't agree with paid sick days. I don't know whether Canada can afford, what would you say, these policies, and there's all sorts of different policies that are, what would you say, entrenched in the work ethic that I don't believe Canada can afford for too much longer. Basically, I think in a nutshell, I'd rather see a workforce and individuals accountable for their basic health and so on and so forth. I mean, in general, I think we've all maybe put a hotel towel in our suitcase by mistake, but what I'm trying to say is if you don't need to work and you're getting paid, why bother? And it's as simple as that. I mean, what would you say? Very few people retire with any sick days left in the pool, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of the unions and government, not to pick on them, but they're a good example, basically rate these contracts in good faith, but they fail to recognize the adversarial nature of the workforce. If there's an opportunity not to work and get paid, people will. They'll take advantage of it.
I think, Don, you've come at the same question I was about to ask, just from a slightly different perspective. Mr. Cook, at what point do these numbers become a problem?
So, I can't speak for all sectors. Again, there's not one answer. Every sector has to look at its own piece. I will address there's a definite trend where public sector, where there's a union agreement in place, the absences are higher than they are in the private sector. And again, many organizations will have, I think there's a sort of a balance, there's a balance point in it. The balance point is an element of trust the many and then manage the exceptions. And I think often in both the union and non-union spaces, if you operate with that, it will work for both. However, what happens in many situations is we trust the many, but we don't manage the exceptions. And that's when I think the risks are when these pieces get out of control. We actually featured last year one of our award winners, our Award of Excellence for the Year, did some work in the public sector and directly worked on the wellness side of it and the absence side of it. And didn't change the union agreement, but simply managed tightly to the specific descriptions in that union agreement as to what was allowable and what wasn't allowable. And so they put in a tracking, monitoring, recording process and series steps of conversations with people whose absence was above the average for the organization. And what they're doing is if the individual is legitimately sick, then they're making sure they pay attention and have a good conversation all the way through so that if accommodation is required, if lighter duties are required, if any of those things are required, the organization knows early, the organization can adapt. So they're showing a good duty of care for people who are going down the genuinely sick line.
Yes.
And what actually happens is those who are genuinely sick all of a sudden realize they're getting asked some difficult questions and asked to, you know, corroborate certain things, and, well, suddenly their level of sickness reduces. And so, yes, it's definitely something that is more prevalent where there's a union agreement, but that doesn't mean it can't be managed. And it is something, again, we have a fantastic example of one of our, you know, professional members actually making a very substantial difference to their organization by putting in a process. Not easy. I mean, they've had to hold the line and take a just calm and clear line with the staff and some of the union representation through that. And it's a 3 to 4 to 5 year shift It's not like you get fixed tomorrow, but the actual results that these folks have produced are very impressive.
You can't tell me that the economy in total can absorb a 5% inefficiency due to sick time, but it can't absorb a 10%, or there are no simplistic yardsticks like that.
No, I mean, it would be nice. I think what we would actually project it on an employer basis is, you know, you want your absence to be running at or below the median of your competition. You know, we're looking at a big enough population to say what is normal absence levels. And we would certainly say to any employer who can look at that and know where they are, if you're above the normal, then there's things that you need to pay attention to. You kind of need to get that monitoring and discipline process in place.
Okay.
And then organizations take on an organization-by-organization basis, we'll take a view on, you know, do we do 3 paid sick days and then you're unpaid after that? Do we do no paid sick days? You know, what do we do? And that becomes part of your competitive offer when you start looking, you know, to gain employees. And again, when we're talking about the mobility within the employee group that we see, we know that employers are having to get competitive again about attracting the people they need. There are lots of folks out there, but they're not necessarily the skills mismatch going on. You may have heard that a few times, but organizations need particular skills, particular areas, particular managerial competencies, yes. And they're not finding those necessarily in those without work. So the opportunities for those in work who can demonstrate that are pretty high. So again, there's a number of sectors amongst our membership where they're back into a very competitive hiring environment, which again is not the assumption when you see the unemployment number where it is.
Yeah. All right. Roy in Langford. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. And Don made some good points, but when you look at the situation, as you were mentioning, where you have people that are off sick, if they're working in an environment where they're close proximity to other workers, as you were saying before, they don't want that spread around. If a person's out working on their own or in the outdoors and that kind of thing, those germs aren't perhaps so easily spread to another person. And we used to have a situation where if you were off for 3 days or more, you had to get a doctor's certificate. But how are you going to get a doctor's appointment within 3 days? Most of the times you can't, and a lot of people now don't even have a doctor. And and if you link it to things like accidents, you know, if you fall off a ladder at work, now you're on compensation. You go ahead of the line for treatment and all the rest of it. But if you fall off the ladder at home cleaning your gutters, you could be off for a long time. And if people don't have sick coverage, what do they do financially?
Yeah.
They could say, well, you've got to take your vacation time, but then there are still a lot of people who only have 2 weeks vacation. That could easily be used up, and now you don't have money for your mortgage or put food on the table for your kids or whatever.
Right. I'm sorry. I have to hold you there, not because I want to, but we're right up against the clock here. Closing thought from you, Ian. Did you want to offer any comment on what Roy had to say?
Yeah, I mean, a quick comment. It goes back to, you know, the employment relationship and employees' relationship with their employer is a crucial thing, and part of employee choice going forward will actually be to look at the benefits package. If I fall off my ladder, have I got critical illness cover? Have I got continuation of wages cover? Is that part of a benefits package that I'm being able to get the people they need? Those types of questions, those types of issues will come back into play, being offered by my employer. And as we get into a more competitive situation when employers are not able to get the people they need, those types of questions, those types of issues will come back into play in terms of being a, you know, somewhere that people want to work for. So
I'm hearing anecdotally that in a lot of workplaces the insurance packages are not as good as they were 5 or 10 years ago. That's one of the things that's suffering in our tighter economic environment.
Absolutely. A lot more people are moving to copay. So where instead of 100% coverage, you're the employee would pay a portion of that. So that is an area that's being wound back and costs are being looked at. Again, this sort of goes back into the absence numbers. A lot of the reason costs are looked at is because the benefit costs are escalating. if you control absence and you're sort of on top of that piece, more proactive, then that's another way to actually limit your benefit costs.
All right. Fascinating subject. Sorry to the newsroom that we are over time. I do have to get out of here, Mr. Cook. I appreciate some of your time this morning.
No, that's all, Frank.
All right. It's Sheila Gardner with the 10:30 News in 1 minute.